We have new information now also on the plane crash. KTVU has just learned the names of the four pilots who were on board the flight. They are Captain Sum Ting Wong, Wee Tu Lo, Ho Li Fook, and Bang Ding Ao. The NTSB has confirmed these are the names of the pilots on board Flight 214 when it crashed. We are working to determine exactly what roles each of them played during the landing on Saturday.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and welcome to First Degree Liberty. You just heard Ed Guy, the German heavy metal band, with their song Lavatory Love Machine. Welcome to First Degree Liberty. On today's episode, Chase and I are joined by my friend Xavier to chat about the mainstream media and how ridiculous the teleprompter readers are. I mean, look, the clip I played at the beginning of the show here shows a San Francisco TV station talking about a recent airline crash there in San Francisco. And the reporter actually reports that the Asian pilots have names like Sum Ting Wong and Ho Li Fook. Ding Bing Ao was another one. And Wee Tu Lo. Now, this is definitely a prank, of course, but it just goes to show you how the mainstream media just reads what's on a teleprompter, and they get their information directly from the government without any kind of fact-checking. They don't go and find out whether or not this was actually true. I mean, come on, Sum Ting Wong? That was an Asian stereotype joke that's going back for, I don't know, a long, long time, as long as I can remember. So we talk about that. We also talk about Adam Kokesh and his recent arrest for having put out a video on the 4th of July where he loads a shotgun in Washington, D.C. Now, this is a big deal. So we talk about that and try to talk about what role Adam is having in the movement and whether or not, you know, that question comes up again about armed rebellion. So you're going to want to check it out. It's a good show. And if you have any feedback for the show, please leave us some comments on Podomatic, subscribe to us on iTunes, and email us at firstdegreeliberty@gmail.com. Now, stay tuned for this episode of First Degree Liberty, and I'll catch you on the flip side. Broadcasting from New York City and Asheville, North Carolina, it's First Degree Liberty with Chase Rachels and Mike Martelli.
It's insane.
Oh my God.
Where do you want to start, man?
I guess we should start off with the most important stuff, the most visible stuff.
There's also Trayvon Martin and what else?
Yeah, what's the deal with that? What's the big deal about that?
The media is trying to portray it as this white guy just went out on a rampage and killed a black teenager. For no reason.
Isn't he, like, Mexican?
Well, according to the news, he's a white Hispanic.
Okay. So he's a white guy.
Yeah.
Just like Barack is a white African.
No, he's black because he's a president, so...
Oh, yeah.
We'll claim him when they're doing a good thing.
So it just actually Stefan Molyneux just did a video that goes over like the facts behind the situation. You know, I don't really want to get into the whole facts of it, but I do want to get into like how the media is just trying to go wild with this and make it seem like this guy Zimmerman killed Trayvon Martin because he was black. And it just goes to show like the media has such a power over people, which is a little bit shocking to me because, you know, it seems like the media is on its way out at the same time because all this alternative media and the internet and more people are getting their facts off of the web now than watching MSNBC.
Of course the media has power, man. Power is just influence, and the media has the most amount of influence. Ergo, the power. I mean, not the most, I guess, but they have a lot of it.
It's interesting. Oh, go ahead.
We don't have to talk about George, though, if you don't want to, but I'm okay if you do. I don't know much about that, though. So.
Yeah, that's like a ticking time bomb. You know, once you get into that, then everybody starts commenting. But, you know, it actually brings to mind another thing that just came up recently with this. There's an airplane crash in San Francisco. Happened last week, actually a week ago today, and it was an Asiana Airlines flight that crash landed in San Francisco as it was coming in for a landing. And the thing I wanted to bring up here was that the media parrots the things the state says, and they never really fact check it. And there's a video that's going viral now, as it should, of a reporter on the news reading a story that came directly from the NTSB. Now, the media didn't question any of the stuff or where it came from or what's really going on, but this report contained the names of the four pilots involved, and they were fake names. They were stereotypical Asian names given as like a practical joke, a prank. But the reporter just goes ahead and reads the names. And these are ridiculous names. Like one of the names was Sumting Wong.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, and she just,
Bing Dang Dong or whatever. Bing Bang Bong.
We Too Low, which is
We Too Low. We Too Low.
But she just
goes ahead. Holy shit. And,
yeah, holy shit. Holy fuck was one of them. How do you not know? How do you not notice this when you're reading the teleprompter that these names are bullshit?
I was like, Sumting Wong.
Yeah.
We Too Low. Holy fuck. Bing Bang Bung or whatever. That was awesome. Yeah.
And the sad thing is they got this from the NTSB. And you can tell that the NTSB themselves didn't even try to check on these names. I mean, they could have called the airline company to find out the actual pilot names. But they just went with it.
What's like, the NTSB again?
National Transportation Safety Bureau.
Okay. Those guys.
Yeah. So it's just more evidence. I mean, every week it seems like another video comes out of another reporter just mindlessly parroting what they're told and the talking points. So I just thought this one was interesting because it just shows how obvious that the teleprompting reader, quote unquote, reporters don't do any kind of fact checking or don't find out anything more than what they're being told to say.
I know, right? So I guess, yeah, like you said, that's true. That's a good empirical example showing how they're just kind of rubber stamping everything that comes their way, I guess, so to speak.
Yeah. So we got that. What else could we talk about? How about Adam Kokesh?
Yeah, that's what I really want to talk about, man.
All right. I mean, for anybody who hasn't seen the video yet, Adam Kokesh released a video on the 4th of July.
Oh, are we recording?
Yeah, I'm recording.
Oh, shit. Oh, okay. All right. Well, it's okay.
I just figured, let's just do it. Let's go through and do it.
Okay. Just hang out.
Yeah, because like Alex Jones always tries to do a news blitz and never gets to it. I think we can do a good job of it. So he released a video of him loading a shotgun in Washington, D.C., which the Supreme Court has determined that it's not illegal to do that. But Washington, D.C. police are still claiming it is illegal to do it.
Wait, Supreme Court has? So we know this? that they said loading a shot, like loading a gun and or having a loaded gun in DC is okay, or in the country rather.
Yeah, I forget what the actual ruling is, but if you go to AdamVersusTheMan.com, he goes through the whole reasons of why he's doing what he's doing.
Okay. Okay. Oh, and did you see the interview he had with Alex Jones the day of, like hours before his arrest? He was talking to him about volunteerism and stuff.
I know. I was so thrilled to see that happen. Like Alex, he was trying to get Alex to understand the points of volunteerism, and Alex was kind of like, you know.
Well, I was kind of just – well, let's talk about this for a little bit because I have a bone to pick a little bit here. I only watched like a third of it, so I'll be upfront about that. But I really don't think Adam is the best person to be explaining how things might function, like as far as like who's going to be the security guys, why they're not going to be monopolized by, you know, the same globalist lizard Jews, you know. Why it's, you know, why that, because he's talking about like one of his main points was, well, they already own all the stuff. And if you switch to free market anarchy, they still own all the stuff, but they didn't own it legitimately. Well, obviously, if it's not legitimately owned, they own it. They acquired it through force or the threat thereof. Then they, you know, they're relieved of that property to the last proper owner who it was taken from. And so, yeah, that might be a complex process how they determine what goes to where, but that's definitely not going to be the case that they're going to be keeping all this expropriated wealth, you know?
Right.
So, anyways, and then also he talked about this devolving to state governments, like abolishing the federal government, like we can go, like, piecemeal. I don't know. I think that's totally out of the question. I think we're going to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. We're going to globalize and have a new world order, and then it's going to implode. It's going to be world government and then no government. There's never going to be like this deliberate devolution of power. They would never let that occur. So it would never be like illegal, like, okay, it's going to be with violence if it happens, or it's going to be by default.
Yeah, I really don't think the feds would give up the power so easily.
Fuck no, at least not through legal means.
Right, of course. If a state decided to secede, you know, well, we already have empirical evidence of this happening
once. Yeah, Civil War, that was when it wasn't nearly as statist. That was like way back when it was actually one of the smallest forms of our government back then, you know, and it's still like that. So now it's infinitely bigger and more intrusive and more, you know, violent and aggressive. It's just more insidious about it, right? So if it didn't work in the 1800s, sure as hell ain't going to work now, you know?
Well, you know, Alex Jones still has this I guess, nostalgia for the Constitution and the United States as like it was once. But I don't think he realizes that never, ever existed. You know, this idea that America was this truly free country and the government was completely benign, it never happened. I mean, right away we see that within George Washington's presidency.
Impressed with Alex. Don't get me wrong. I'm impressed with Alex. Alex is making progress because I could tell that Alex was trying to be very clear that he's just here to warn us about the globalists. He's not here necessarily to prescribe a better solution, and he's actually totally open to the self-government solution. Like, he's not like, you know, he's not dogging it completely. He just has some concerns. I'm talking about Adam.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to take this middle ground approach of he was the one advocating for just states having government, just abolishing the federal government, and the states should be governing themselves and stuff. I'm like, that's just never, ever going to happen. You know, it never will. The federal government will never let that happen. Because in order for that to happen, that would have to be like some sort of legal process. And I just don't think there's ever going to be a legal process, you know. And I don't even foresee like a really violent revolution either. I just foresee us centralizing power until, you know, economic law takes effect and we default, you know, huge depression, government ends, and then we finally, you know, rise out of the ashes with something better. But no, I definitely don't see a deliberate de-escalation.
Let's talk about that, because I think that's really important, too, is what you're talking about is that when the government becomes so powerful and so crazy and centralized like that, that what happens is economic progress gets pretty much killed.
Yeah.
You know, people are not allowed to create better things, and there's no innovations. So eventually things will stagnate in an economy like that, and then there will be no more progress, and at that point, it's going to sort of collapse, kind of like the end of the Soviet Union did.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, no, I totally agree. because no matter how low level local the government is, it's still expropriating wealth. It's still redistributing wealth. No, it's not as harmful, but and I would be actually for this if I thought it could actually happen. You know, I'm actually less sure that we could get to a point where the states were just governing themselves and that we're going to get to a voluntary society. You know? I really am. That might seem counterintuitive at first glance.
No, but, you know, especially knowing what we know about the New World Order, right? Their whole plan is to centralize power. And these are the world's most influential and powerful people. I don't think they're going to just sit back and say, yeah, you know what, let's let those crazy Texans go and do their own thing, you know?
Right.
People are employed.
So now that we're done critiquing Adam, though, and his thing with Alex, let's go ahead and give him some kudos where he deserves it, which is, you know, that was kind of ballsy, a bold move to go out there with his shotgun on July 4th, and he figured, I guess he canceled it, so he needs to do something, you know, not so it's not completely a lost cause. And, wow, now is it true? I've heard rumors of he might be charged with armed sedition. Is that just talk, or is that...
I can't confirm that. I mean, it says there's sort of like an article on AdamVersusTheMan.com about that. But I don't really know for sure. I haven't been able to confirm that.
Yeah, it's interesting. But if they do charge him with sedition or armed sedition or what have you...
Yeah.
That's gonna set a very dangerous precedent for the rest of us, and I think that's amazing. I'd actually prefer that they convict him for sedition, because then people are gonna be like, "Whoa, you know, police state alarm, you know, alert." Then we're gonna have no choice but to either coalesce and cooperate and work on ways to really disembowel and disempower the state. Or we're going to realize that we're next. You know, because if they can end him on charges of sedition, they can end any of us for the same charges. I mean,
even just talking about overthrowing the government could be considered sedition.
Right. And so I think he realizes what he could be here is I hate to say it, but we could end up being as a martyr, an effective martyr. He's the person who's becoming iconic. He has a lot of popular support, a lot of exposure, even in the more mainstream media areas. So if he gets charged with sedition, I'm hoping that wakes a lot of us up and a lot more of us get more serious about what's going on and become more active, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think the whole armed march on Washington was a great idea. And it's really show people that, hey, you know, we're not alone. There's going to be thousands of us out here.
But I
still think there was a sense of complacency. I mean... Even now, I mean, even for me, it doesn't always seem that bad every day. You know, the state doesn't seem as bad.
Yeah. When you're well, it's kind of because, like, you're used to living in it. Like, you know, it's like you've never, like, in theory, you're so angry at it because you see in theory that it's so corrupt. But in practical life, you might not be as appalled because you've never really known anything much better, right? So you don't really have much of a base of a reference to compare it to as far as, like, your actual practical living. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, and also in my personal life, I've done a lot of work to really live free, you know. So in a way, I feel like, oh, yeah, you know, armed marches on Washington are kind of beyond where I am,
mm-hmm.
you know. But it could very well come down to that if they charge him with sedition and convict him, that they could come after a lot more than just him, you know.
Yeah, because that's a huge infringement on our freedom of expression.
Right.
You know, now we know for certain they're monitoring all of our communications and discourse, and if they're going to start charging us and throwing us in prison for said communications and discourse, because what he did was an act of expression. He didn't threaten anybody. He didn't hurt anybody. It was an expressive act. Then that's one of those red lines that we were talking about the other day, man. It's one of those red lines. And, you know, I know they're just now crossing it, but... I'm just really I'm really dreading to see how far they cross it and how soon they cross it that far, if that makes any sense. Like,
yeah.
I didn't expect them to charge him with sedition. I mean, that really, if they do, that really kind of worries me. I figured that's why they're arresting him, but that they would still feel there's enough public attention and pressure on them that they would have to call it, like, just a possession charge or get him on a technicality. But if they're... they're so bold to where they can actually be overt about we're arresting him for sedition, and that means that we're further gone than I thought we were, you know.
Yeah, man.
Well, I mean, are we sure there's enough public would there be enough public outcry about that? Because I feel like all they would have to do is post that video on the news, and a majority of people in the United States would see that and be like, oh, look at that terrorist. So, like, that domestic terrorist, good thing they got him.
Well, I don't know, because a lot of people who call him terrorist also are finding appeal with using the term American Revolution. And a lot of people who call him terrorist, like the conservatives, neocons, are typically a little bit against Obama. So I think it could go either way, you know.
Yeah,
I think it'd go either way. I only would be concerned if he actually gets convicted with sedition, not necessarily if he just gets charged. If he's actually convicted, though, then it's like, wow.
Well, you know, on the other hand, it would be huge, too, if a jury acquitted him of that, right? I mean, I think that would even send a bigger message to the feds that they're not going to get away with just putting people in jail for disagreeing with them or saying things about armed rebellion or whatnot.
I honestly almost hope they do convict him. I just, because I feel like we need to break some eggs to make this fucking omelet. Because people aren't just going to get on board with theory. They need to see some fucking tragic stuff happen, you know, before they actually wake their asses up. I don't want tragic stuff to happen, but if that's what it takes to wake them up, then that's what it takes, you know.
Well, you know, there's a great video that Brett Vanat did called The American Way. You go on YouTube and look it up. It's, basically explaining in just like a 10-minute video of the parallels between how the rise of the Third Reich in Germany and here in the U.S., similar things going on with how the American people, through the education system, have been sort of made complacent about all of these tyrannical things that are going on. And really, we've seen in you know, Nazi Germany, it took the concentration camps and all that stuff to happen before people even realized what was going on. And then people really didn't know what was going on.
Right. Oh, yeah. I guess I share Edward Snowden's greatest fear, which is people meeting these unfortunate events like the arresting and the conviction and incarceration of Adam Kokesh on the grounds of sedition and, you know, people like Edward Snowden whistleblowing things about unconstitutional behavior, which should be the supreme law of the land, supposedly. And when I see these things going on, I guess my greatest fear is that, like you said, that people take them with apathy and complacency. You know, that they don't care. I mean,
my biggest fear is that people won't wake up until they're on the boxcars on the way to the FEMA camps. You know?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's ultimately the conclusion of them not caring, right?
Right. Because it is hard, even when you have, I mean, we experienced this with the Edward Snowden thing, is even when you have overwhelming proof that the government is doing really, really bad things, it seems like people still think it's a conspiracy theory. They still think that's, you know, that's great. Oh, yeah, yeah. You probably watch too much X-Files, you know? Yeah. They don't really get the magnitude of what's going on.
You know, the other thing that's disconcerting is the fact that the less they care, not only is the more jeopardy our liberties, but even our personal safety is at greater stake the less people that care, because then the very few who do care just stick out that much more.
Right.
You know, I mean, we're really on their radar. I'm sure of it. I know at least I am. I'm sure that you're on a couple lists. You know, I'm sure most of the anarchist community is. Hell, probably a big portion of the fucking watered-down Tea Party is.
Oh, I'm sure we have FBI files. I mean, we already know as a fact that, you know, during J. Edgar Hoover's 50-year reign at the FBI, they had files on all kinds of people, from politicians to average citizens to celebrities. You know, everybody had a file, pretty much.
Oh, yeah.
And that was, you know, the 1960s, when I guess, well, no, he, J. Edgar Hoover was out in the 70s, I think, he left his position. So that was as recent as the 1970s, we know for a fact. And now knowing that they've collected all this information from us on, you know, online, then we know that they've building databases on people to find out, and they've admitted that to find out patterns, to find out associations, who hangs out with who knows who believes the same things as a group or whatever. So if they wanted to find out who all of us, you know, anarchists are, they could easily find out.
And you know something else I've noticed too?
Yeah.
You notice on Facebook that you tend to remain in the same circles of people. Like when Facebook first started, it was kind of all about branching out. Well, at least when it got mainstream, that is. It was about expanding your social circles, intersecting with new social circles. It was a place where a bunch of different ideas could come together and then be exposed to people who've never seen them before.
Right.
It's kind of like not only for friends, but also for an exchange of ideas, free market of ideas, what have you. But more and more, as time has gone by, it's almost ingenious. They've been under the guise of saying, we want to help you find more people like you. They've been closing off our exposure to the outside world more and more and just exposing us to other people within our same, like within our same mindsets. So we're not really, our outreach has really decreased because of it. And not only that, but I feel like a lot of us become more complacent too, because when we're only surrounded by volunteers in these social network communities, like, oh yeah, there's a lot of people out there who get it. This is a tiny fucking minority, man. If we saw even an iota of the mainstream shit that's in most people's feeds, we'd be like outraged every day. What's going on? You know,
that's another thing is they're starting to censor the feeds. They're starting to show you only a certain group of people on your news feed. And this has been going on for a while. I don't know, maybe a year or two, where now every time I log in, it's always the same like 10 people that show up in my news feed, even though I'm friends with, you know, a couple hundred people.
Mm-hmm. And it makes us more culpable, I think, to the government legally even. You know, if there's a few bad eggs, you know, you want to make sure that there's not that kind of stigma or that kind of bad smell on other people who might not be involved, because if they're proven later to have no involvement whatsoever, then that discredits your accusations. But if you can get everyone with the similar beliefs in the same spot and just, you know, love, like just leave that stink on the people who believe the same things or the same rhetoric, then if one of them acts a certain violent way or aggressive way, it becomes very easy to say, hey, they're saying the same stuff, they believe the same thing, they're guilty of this too. You know, it's a way of tracking us and associating us with other people they don't want. They're partitioning us off. And I think that that's one of the reasons, not the only reason, but I think that's one of the reasons why Facebook is doing it. It's probably part of their deal with the information sharing. It makes it easier for them to show to the government, the associations, when they can automatically, with their algorithms, bring us all together and not let us, you know, exert as much propaganda to other new people, you know, containing us.
That it makes me wonder, too, like, you know, when I post something on Facebook or share a video, how many people that aren't voluntarists are seeing it?
Hardly any.
Yeah, that's scary, you know?
You know, that's
looking.
Go ahead.
You know, if you're looking for sharing information with people who may not have heard it before, you know, and you think, all right, I'm just going to post it on my wall and people will see it. But then you realize people's news feeds are being manipulated, so they're only seeing certain groups of people or certain like-minded individuals. They're not going to see it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that, and that's why I'd recommend trying to find ways to circumvent those strictures. And the way that myself and Justin do it is we have these pages. You know, we have all these pages, and they start off as statist as conservative Republican, you know, or just anti-war, just anything that any general liberal would be on, to, you know, anarchist, atheist, you know, whatever, agorist, whatever. So the point is, you have these pages, people join them from these outside your traditional circles in your own personal feed, and then, like, for instance, in the conservative Republican page, you might post something mainstream libertarian to get them exposed to that next step of the ladder. And then the mainstream libertarian page will expose them something like a kind of minarchist, and then et cetera, et cetera. So it's like this little sliding scale. So these are the kind of maneuvers I think we should start making, is finding ways to get outside this exclusive circle we're stuck in. We're just talking to each other every day. We're just preaching to the choir every day. You know, and that's why I feel like a lot of us are just preaching to the choir all the time. We're not spreading our ideas out. We're just talking about them with each other within, you know?
Right. And one of the things I do is I like to send videos and links to articles and stuff to people I know in my family and friends that may not be ones that pop up regularly on Facebook, just as a way of branching out and reaching out to people.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I think it's so important to not neglect our physical social lives, you know, in favor of this social media and social network, because it's a lot harder to control who we're hanging out with, who we're associating with, who we meet, who we run into when we're out in the real world. When we're in the virtual world and Facebook and some other social network site, it's very easy to direct our encounters to make sure that we never encounter certain people, that we never really encounter that many new people or have very many serendipitous, you know, occasions. And that's the kind of stuff that is the serendipitous meetings and that, you know, off the chance remark that you make that catches someone's attention, that really is what's the main reason that gets people started on this path. They don't ever get started, there's no chance, you know.
Right. And that's hard to do because you don't, I mean, some of these ideas do come across as kooky and crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're with a new group of people, the question always comes up, well, when is a good time to start talking about voluntarist ideas?
You know, I found the best way to do it is let them bring up the topic and then you make a remark from that perspective. And if they decide to engage in a discussion, then they allow you to break down your argument more and more fundamentally. And as volunteers, we know exactly where it starts at. So we just keep breaking down, well, you know, it should be okay to smoke weed because they're hurting anybody. And they're hurting anybody they're not creating a crime. There's no restitution involved. It's worse to hurt someone for not hurting anyone than the whatever activity they did that wasn't hurting anyone. It's just logic, right? So it's just let them, I think, make the first move. You know, and you don't have to give it all at once because that's overwhelming. Just step by step, try to get them to kind of lead them to the door, let them open the door, you know?
You don't want to do that Alex Jones thing where he mentions like 50 conspiracies in 1 minute, you know, where he's like, Anwar al-Awlaki at the Pentagon, 9/11 was an inside job, Oklahoma City, they killed Kennedy, the aliens in Roswell, blah, 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 lizard Jews, you know?
Yeah, you got to give them the substance before the conclusion. Yeah. That's what I found. The conclusion will always scare them away. You have to give them the argument before you give them the conclusion, though. You have to give them – you start out with the reasoning, and then you make your conclusion that, you know, the 9/11 is an inside job. You don't start off with the 9/11 is an inside job, then try to justify it because they're automatically on the defensive and skeptical. You just start off with the reason and evidence.
Well, you know, I just had an interesting little Facebook discussion that turned out well when a friend of mine posted something about we need to learn how to be more civil in this country and came into a discussion about politics. And I just simply put that politics is a domination-based system where one group of people uses their influence to dominate another group. And that opened the door to explaining how the political system is based on coercion and violence. And I think it went positively because it was somebody else posted something. I didn't have to come in there with this whole conspiracy thing and just put out the logic, which was easy to follow, you know?
That's great.
If I support X and you're against X and my politician gets in there, he goes in and supports legislation that will put you in a cage if you do or, you know, X behavior. And that was easy for people to understand without having to get into all kinds of conspiracies. And
yeah. And they have to pay for it too.
Right, right. And, you know, I think that often happens with libertarians is we're so eager to get the whole point across because this is a big thing. It's like, you know, the Matrix is used as an example. And I think it makes sense because it is like the Matrix. You're trying to wake somebody up to the Matrix. But doing it all at once is overwhelming for people. So going in there with something small like that might plant the seeds, as you mentioned, of looking that up or thinking about it in a different way. And then that opens the door to more discussions.
Oh, of course. I totally agree. Man. So what else is in the news? We have
Children being arrested.
Oh, yeah.
The free country we call the former United States. I have here a list of... Go ahead.
No, I was going to say go ahead and just run those off. And
yeah, I found an article on IntelliHub. It's an independent news network of 19 children who were arrested for stupid things. We have a 12-year-old girl was arrested for spraying herself with perfume. A 13-year-old boy was arrested for burping in class.
Why?
Yeah. It's like, I mean, this list gets ridiculous. In this recent story in New Jersey that happened just this week, where these children were threatened to be arrested for stripping down naked at the beach. A 4-year-old and a 2-year-old stripped naked so that they could go wash off the sand from their bodies in the ocean. And somebody called the cops on them, and the cops actually showed up and told the parents that it was a arrestable offense for going for public nudity. Holy, I mean, this is like the sickness that permeates our society, is that if you can be okay with the state arresting children for stupid things, then it seems like you could put up with anything.
Oh, yeah.
God. You know, let's see. Here's one that happened in New York. In early 2010, a 12-year-old girl at a school in Forest Hills, New York, was arrested by police and marched out of her school in handcuffs just because she doodled on her desk.
Oh, shit.
What about the security guard who broke the arm of a 16-year-old girl because she left crumbs on the floor?
What? Oh, my God.
I mean, it's just ridiculous. Oh, here, a 6-year-old girl in Florida was handcuffed and sent to a mental facility after throwing a temper tantrum at her elementary school.
A mental facility.
Another kid was arrested for throwing paper airplanes in class. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. Oh, here's one. In Allentown, Pennsylvania, a 14-year-old girl was tasered in the groin area by a school security officer, even though she had put up her hands in the air to surrender. And there was one that Alex Jones talked about recently, where this 11-year-old girl with autism got stripped down and started walking along a highway, and a police officer pulled up next to this kid and tasered her.
What?
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Why do you need to taser someone who's naked? Why don't you just arrest them like anyone else?
Yeah, that's what I don't understand. These cops have body armor. They have weapons. They're supposed to have had self-defense training and all this stuff.
They're sadistic is what it is.
Yeah, how do you justify tasing a naked 11-year-old girl? Because how do you feel I just want to know how you feel threatened by that enough to justify tasing the person.
Jesus Christ.
She's naked, so she's obviously not hiding like a machine gun under her shirt.
Yeah, exactly.
It's sadism, man. That's all it is.
You know, but this is something we should address too, is that it seems like the police are not only becoming more and more militaristic, but they're also becoming more sadistic as well. You know, dogs being shot by the cops are on the rise too. It seems now like anytime there's a cop that encounters a dog, the dog just gets killed. For no reason, whatever reason it is. Even if the dog is friendly and coming up to lick the officer, they just get shot.
Shit.
And this is stuff that your average American doesn't know because it's not on the mainstream media. You know, if you go to websites like copblock.org, you find out about, you know, sort of these crazed psycho cops that are becoming more and more prevalent in the society.
God.
Plus, we also get
I remember when I used to think that people who complain about cop abuse and stuff were just like full of shit and were just, you know, criminals and degenerates and stuff. Like, oh, you know, they're just talking shit because they're mad that they can't do what they want to do and all this other junk, you know. And man, it's crazy how that's how most people think of it today. Like, most people are like, well, cops not only are undeserving of this criticism and these accusations of abuse and coercion, but they're actually deserving of an honor higher than the average American for putting their lives at risk to protect and serve. From you know, we have to From actually children. Honor them.
This is the great threat to cops nowadays, is children. You know, God forbid you sell lemonade on the street corner, you're a fucking terrorist nowadays.
Oh, yeah, children.
Yeah, I mean, that's the psycho thing, is that you know, when the police actually have to deal with something really violent, like, say, a home invasion, right? They spend 10 minutes getting to the site, and they, you know, park their cars outside, and they wait outside, right? They don't go in all heroic. They're a bunch of fucking pussies. But meanwhile, you have something like, a child burping in class, and the cops parade in like a bunch of heroes because there's no real threat to them. They're not actually in danger from a naked child, you know, at the beach or whatever. But, God, you know, if there was a psycho with a gun, the cops would be the first people to be afraid of it and bring in the tanks and the machine guns to deal with it. I mean, look, I mean, like what happened in Boston and with the Watertown and the Boston bombing, right? We're dealing with one 19-year-old kid. And the cops come out with the machine guns and the tanks and all the Ninja Turtle outfits.
Holy shit.
For that, you know.
Yeah.
They're a bunch of fucking pussies.
Well, what about the dude who was holed up?
Dorner?
Dorner, yeah. And they just ended up burning down the place.
Yeah, they're not heroic. They don't actually go and do heroic things like go in and try to stop a madman. They just sit back and they... You know, they send in drones or little robots, or they just burn the house down.
Whatever happened to Dorner, by the way?
He's dead.
Oh, he died in the fire? I thought he wasn't in the house.
No, they killed him.
Oh, that's just conspiracy stuff?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's at a gas station in St. Louis pumping gas with Elvis.
That's well, because, you know, it's you know, even if there was a body and like burn, it's hard to identify burned bodies, you know?
Yeah.
I believe you. So anyways, I've got a story for you.
Sure.
This happened locally, now that we're on the topic of police abuse. I met a guy, I'll leave his name anonymous just in case there's any sort of legal reasons, but I met a guy at the Libertarian Conference, the statewide one in North Carolina, who sells marijuana. But what makes him unique is he actually is an incorporated business. He's incorporated, meaning that he had to put his mission statement to the government to approve and incorporate him and approve all that stuff and send it back or whatever, which they did. And it's very explicit that he's you know, selling marijuana. And it's not just recreational, it's also medical purposes, but he's researching marijuana cures and applicability to illnesses and also for recreational use or whatever. And they sign off. He also pays taxes to the state. He has tax stamps and all his plants.
Yeah.
So the state takes his revenue for this, thousands of dollars. Like, he paid $12,000 last year in taxes to the state. And $8,000 of that $12,000, 75% of that money goes back to the local police departments. All right. So keep that in mind, that he paid $8,000 to the local police departments. And finally, he's also got a privilege license. So he's jumping through all the hoops. He's got all his records, all his tax receipts. He's paid federal income tax, state income tax, all of that shit. And it's very clear what he's doing. And he's been doing fine for the last 2 years. But yesterday, they decided to come in and raid his house. And this was like a no shit, no knock raid, SWAT team style. Coming with guns on his kids. And this guy is totally open. He's honest. He's peaceful. He's always been very cooperative. So clearly an excessive use of force. And this is like really heart-wrenching because they're pointing guns at his children in these Ninja Turtle uniforms, right? And the kicker is that guess who busted him? The very police departments, which are happily taking his money and taxes that are going back to the police departments. And then they're using that money to fucking send a SWAT team up his ass and ruin his business.
Yeah.
Right? It's crazy. I actually did an interview with him last night. So I'll be posting that up soon and trying to get more help for him. But the point is that it's absolutely ridiculous. Even though he's jumped through all the hoops, all the loopholes, he's done everything. He's given them what they asked for. He's catering to their racketeering scheme. It doesn't protect you. So you're still never ultimately protected. You're still just kind of at...
Well,
at their own discretion, you're at their whim.
This goes to what I'm talking about, right? Similarity between this guy and Adam Kokesh is the state knows they're not actually really threats, but yet they respond by showing up with the Ninja Turtle outfits and flashbang grenades and raiding the house and terrorizing children for a guy who probably would have let them in had they just knocked and asked, you know. And not only that, but of course, there's no victim with any of these things.
No.
You know, if he's selling marijuana to people who want marijuana, there's no victim.
It's fucking, yeah, it's marijuana, man. Marijuana. And this guy, and I was telling him this, I'm like, this guy, he sells a product, and this is an indication of what the free market can do with this stuff. This guy sells pot or cannabis for the cheapest I've ever seen anywhere else, like 44 and 8th. And I swear to God, it's the best pot I've ever had. And he has the most utmost integrity. He not only gives you the pot, he gives you like little glass jars to seal it in, little plastic grinders, those little gift bags to go with it, like the whole shebang, man. $40 an eighth and you get all this shit. And, you know, they shut guys like that down, who's not only providing a better product and a service to other people, which is safer and, you know, less aggressive. Now people are having to go to more violent drug dealers, more scrupulous drug dealers, or unscrupulous drug dealers. People who rip you off. Like, I went to, because he got arrested, I had to go to some other guy and paid him for like 4 grams, and he gave me a gram of a pot, cannabis. And it was, you know, not even that good for $50. You know, and that's the kind of shit they're doing, is they're taking these good pot dealers with integrity off the streets. And they're leaving the only ones on the streets, the thug ones, the fucking shitheads out there, you know, the fucking gangbangers. And then no wonder why everyone has this negative stigma of drug dealers.
Right.
So it's crazy, man. It's police abuse is rampant. And all I can say is just bring a fucking camera. Make sure that shit's recorded. That's the only real protection you have right now. Real practical protection.
Well, now you see the cops going after cell phones and any kind of recording devices, you know, because they think they realize now that their behavior is being monitored as much as they're monitoring our behavior.
Oh, well, though, that's why we have the, you know, the live upstreaming. I mean, right. Technology just finds a way to get around these loopholes, and it's so amazing. Just nowadays, you can just live upstream recording a cop. So if he destroys your camera, it's already there. Too late.
Yeah.
It's posted.
It's fantastic. You know, this is how we need to start breaking their, you know, breaking them down, is by showing the public that these people aren't there to protect you and protect your rights. They're there as the enforcement wing of the mafia with a flag. Mm-hmm. You know, just as the goon comes down and knocks down your door and says, you know, oh, look, you got some flammable, you know, store here. It'd be a shame if it just went up in flames.
Right.
You know? The state does the same thing, only they use uniforms, you know, and costumes, blue costumes, Ninja Turtle costumes to come.
Oh, yeah, it's totally racketeering. Like, the mafia comparison is completely accurate.
Well, like Xavier was saying before, like the RICO thing, you want to mention that?
Right, yeah, I mean, you could use the RICO Act to go after the president and the government.
So, remind our viewers, what's RICO again? I'm like, you know, a lot of people don't know what RICO is all about.
It was for racketeering. It was created to take down organized crime, and it closes the loophole where if someone orders a hit or something, they can't be touched because they didn't do it. It closes that loophole. So it lets you go after, like, you know, the head of the crime family or whatever.
Sure.
And there's, like, 32 state laws and I think, like, or 32 federal laws, like 18 state laws that they can go after you for this. You know, racketeering, extortion, murder. And, I mean, pretty much the government has done all these things. I mean, racketeering.
Oh, of course.
And I mean, you could use that really to go after the president himself and take him down. I mean, they fall under all these laws.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the laws never apply to that. Well,
of course not.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Well, like, I like the way Stefan goes talks about it when he says that it's not that they're against these actions in principle. It's just they're a lot more profitable and lucrative when you have a monopoly over them, you know, just like a rival gang. It's just like a rival gang member or a gang, rival gang rather. So
right, when you're the only gang in town, you make a lot more money off of it than you would if there was, you know, 50 gangs in town.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, everything they do fits under the category of organized crime.
Oh yeah, of course.
That's why I think the calling them a mafia is really a good way of explaining it. Because there's so many similarities to the way
they're a terrorist organization. I think that's even more accurate.
Well, look at, I mean, terrorizing children is something they love to do. You know, bringing in, they go into these raids when they know that there are children in the house, as a show of force. Like, hey, look, let's intimidate the shit out of people so that they don't do things that we find, you know, wrong or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, from what I heard of what happened with Adam Kokesh is they raided the house with a flashbang grenade, which is a grenade that it's not designed to kill. It's designed to stun people. It creates a really, really loud bang and a bright flash that disorients people. So they threw it in the house and they came in without knocking, of course. Mm-hmm. And they grabbed people at the point of a gun and they put everybody in one room. And Adam's girlfriend was taking a shower at the time. So she's sitting there naked and they're just, it's all about intimidation and
arts
people and, you know, what good is that going to do? It's not really, it's not protecting the public safety in any way.
And also for people who may not know Adam, like people who see like these things going on in the news or if they're just watching, they're automatically going to think that that was a dangerous person in the house because they see all these cops dressed up in, you know, all this armor and shit. So they're going to assume like, oh, that must have been a dangerous person.
I don't know. I think Adam has a significant edge as far as his popular perception is concerned, because he's a former Marine, he's a former combat veteran, he's a former news anchor, he talks about ideals of smaller government and the American Revolution. I mean, so I think it's going to be a lot harder to demonize him than your average anarchist activist, right? But yes, you're right. It's definitely not going to stop him, and he's definitely going to be painted as such as a extreme right wing terrorist or whatever.
Right, like I guarantee you, the media is going to focus in on, well, they raided his house and they found guns and ammunition, you know, as if that.
Ooh, I've got guns and ammunition right here.
As if that means anything, right? But the average person reading the newspapers or looking at the little ticker tape on the bottom of MSNBC, they're going to say, well, the guns were found. Well, and this guy, and then of course they're going to make the link that this guy was for talking about armed rebellion and he's got all these guns. So the average person's going to think, oh, well, he must be dangerous.
Yeah. I got to give it to Adam, though. He's doing really good. Like, he's thus far, from what I've seen, not participated. He hasn't he hasn't considered being fingerprinted. He hasn't ID'd himself.
Right.
He didn't talk when they brought him into court, I guess. They had to bring him in a wheelchair. He wouldn't even walk. That was awesome.
That's good. Create, you know, and just don't comply. That's what he's doing is non-compliance.
Yeah.
And in an effort to show how these people are the aggressors.
Yeah.
You know, he's not going to cooperate because you know, if he walks in under his own power or whatever, it just kind of shows that he's cooperating. He's giving them legitimacy. You know, he's trying to show that these people are illegitimate and they're the ones initiating force here. And so he's just not complying.
Right. That's good.
But then
that's
nowadays, right, non-compliance is also... What do they do now when you don't comply? Like if you go limp, they kick you, tase you, and then say stop resisting.
Mm-hmm.
Because resisting arrest is a crime, I guess.
So I think this time Adam might just stick it out and not take the plea deal.
Well, did he take the plea deal last time?
I think he did, didn't he? Something like that. I think part of the plea deal may have been just a negotiation to cancel the July 4th thing or whatever.
Oh, I see.
I think that might be what it was or something like that. But anyways, I don't think he'll take any plea deal, and I think he's going to face at least a couple of years in prison this time.
Yeah.
I mean, having shrooms is illegal, undoubtedly, even if they drop the gun charge. You know... And
it leads me to wonder, though, why it's almost, I don't think those shrooms were his, because he goes about these things in a very systematic way, you know, making sure that he does everything clean, you know. So it could have been his roommates. It could have been somebody else in that house. There was a couple of other people living there. So they would have to prove that they were his shrooms, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, I mean, it doesn't seem
they would have needed a warrant for that.
Right. Oh, that's right.
Because they didn't go to his house looking for drugs. They went to his house because of the video he made.
Right.
So they wouldn't be able to even use that at all. Lee.
Right. That's a good point. It's against, well, not, again, they're not going to care about the law, but it's against the law for them to write a search warrant for one thing, going in looking for something else. Or we should bring Eric on again, Eric the prosecutor, to ask him how that works.
Right. Yeah. Oh shit! I forgot to talk to what's his face today, the lawyer that we interviewed. Who's the guy we interviewed?
Oh, Mark Stevens.
Mark Stevens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I could tell you now. Like the one thing is, there's the writ of habeas corpus thing that somebody needs to file on behalf of your friend. Mm-hmm. So you might, you know, if you contact Mark on an email or whatever, I'm sure he'll be glad to help out with that.
Right. Absolutely. I think I'll do that.
But it's also the issue is when you're faced with these things is how do you go about it? If you go about it the activist way, the Mark Stevens way, you're challenging the legitimacy of the system, which is dangerous in a way because judges can ultimately do whatever they feel like doing. They don't have to listen to the law, and they can arrest you. They can put you in jail for any reason that they want.
But they're honorable, Mike.
Right. They're supposed to be honorable. So there, you run the risk of pissing off the judge and getting yourself into trouble. But at the same time, you can also show that the system has no legitimacy, mm-hmm. you know? And then that's the problem is your friend has to decide what they want to do. Do they want to play nice and you know, potentially, you know, get out of this thing pretty easily, or do they want to make themselves an activist and go about doing this, challenging the whole legitimacy of the system?
Right.
You know, and that's hard to do because they make it very difficult for a reason, because obviously they don't want people going about challenging the authority. So they want to make it difficult. And if you have a job and if you have a family, it becomes harder to challenge them because you're facing a lot of time in jail, a lot of time researching and trying to fight this thing on your own.
Right. Yeah, it's a lot of work, man. It really is.
It is.
Shit.
It is. It's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's why people end up taking plea deals is because they don't understand the system and they don't want to fight it.
It's work and it's risk, so those two things people don't like.
Oh, exactly. You know, like, yeah, I mean, if I was pulled over by the cops and I got a parking ticket, right now I have a really good job and I don't want to have to take time out from this job to go sit in a courtroom all day and wait for a chance to, you know, argue with a judge and face, you know, getting thrown in jail for contempt of court for something. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not an easy decision to make.
And that's why I've always found that to be really messed up. Just to get a conviction that they can threaten you. Isn't that kind of like extortion almost?
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that almost exactly what it is?
Actually, it's a
and they know what kind of income the people they have in there have, and they know what leverage to use against them, you know?
Right.
It's,
well, my friend Wes Bertrand, a friend of the show, mm-hmm. Has a video, or I think it's a podcast he did a long time ago, a couple of years ago, where he challenged a parking ticket, and he got lucky that the judge was very open to having a conversation in a very peaceful kind of way. And what happened is the judge admitted, yeah, this is kind of an extortion. And that I thought was pretty huge.
Really?
Yeah. It's in his podcast feed. It's probably one of the earlier podcasts. Like,
that's awesome.
In the 30s.
That is extortion. What do you know?
Yeah. I mean, the judge was nice and threw the case out. But that doesn't always happen, you know? When you challenge the system that way, you're dealing with a potential tyrant in a robe.
Yes, yeah. I agree.
It's amazing how the crime is just not worth as much when you take a plea deal than if you don't. Because I know that for me, when I was in court, I was looking at 15 years if I exercised my rights and went in front of a jury and said that I was innocent, as opposed to 6 months probation if I just said I was guilty.
Shit.
Holy yeah, which shit. Is another, they threaten you.
That's not justice, you know? It's not justice if 15 years would have been a justifiable sentencing for your crime. Yeah, if you plea, it's 6 months. No, because the pleading or not pleading shouldn't be a difference of 14 and a half years. That's not a crime. That's exactly. So either one is just or the other one's just or none of them are just, but they're not both just simultaneously. You know? That's impossible logically. That's ridiculous.
But now, you know, look, if you're facing that kind of thing, it's a scary situation. Mm-hmm. You know, to be put in jail for 15 years should you be found guilty of it.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. It's real scary.
And then, you know, say it was something like possession of marijuana or whatnot. You're potentially putting your hands in a bunch of jurors that may agree with the state that, yeah, that's the wrong kind of vegetation that you have there. You should go.
Wrong kind of vegetation.
You also have to look at the jury selection, right? I mean, who are you putting your life in the hands of? How are they chosen? I mean, it's supposed to be a jury of your peers, but if you look at, like, the Zimmerman case, his jury is 6 women, 5 of whom have kids.
Yeah.
It's kind of... I'm pretty sure they'll be kind of biased.
Yeah. Very, very true. Good point. Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know how we can go into this forever.
Isn't like a jury of your peers supposed to be your peers? I mean, did they interpret it as just average people? But the way I see it is like if, like, say I was a doctor and the case was a malpractice case, I'd want 12 doctors sitting in the jurors box because they understand what's going on. Not just 12 average people who have known nothing about medicine except for what they've seen on an episode of House.
Right, and think about it, dude. That could be like the benefit of like having a being part of a having defense insurance, rather, is that if you're going to purchase your defense insurance, which includes arbitration fees and stuff, then if you ever get called upon to be part of a trial and you're a doctor, that you can get selected for when a doctor's on trial, you can be selected for the jury. That way, I mean, if you ever have to go to trial, then we'll get the doctors within our insurance organization to go to your jury for your trial. That's part of the deal. And that might get like a discount on their premium, like a serious one or something. And I mean, so then that way you have the free market incentives putting the right juries in the right places, right?
Well, it just makes sense. I mean, why would 12 people who know nothing about medicine be asked to decide on something that could be a complete medical scientific thing? They don't know.
What they'll say is that's why they bring in the experts, because, you know, they have credible information. But then, you know, I think it's bullshit. They bring in one expert witness on something and he has, you know, 6 or 7 other scholars in the same field he's in who have 7 different mutually exclusive opinions on the same thing.
Right.
You know, but they have to assume it's gossip. So I agree. It would be better if they were all somehow had some sort of technical expertise as far as the relevant information that concerns the crime in question. So,
but who's the expert at that point? Because you're going to have an expert for the defendant and an expert for the prosecutor, and they're both going to be experts, but they're going to be saying different things. So if you have someone who's injured, one expert's going to say that the injury wasn't that bad, and the other expert's going to say that it was, you know, worse than you think. So
there's got to be a third party thing, a disinterested thing.
Yeah. Which is hard to find when it comes to the state, right? Because they're all working for the state.
Yeah.
So how do you find that disinterested third party?
Well, you can't. It's a conflict of interest. That's why people who try the cases shouldn't be working for the same institution as those who are evaluating those cases.
Right. I mean, that's all, you know, Mark Stevens' thing where you ask the judge if the 3 questions. The first question is, am I entitled to a fair trial? And of course, they're going to say yes because of the, you know, public relations. And then 2, if there's a conflict of interest, is it possible to get a fair trial? They're going to say, well, of course not. And the 3rd question is, well, who do you work for? And that's the one that gets them, because the judge, the prosecutor, the cops, they're all working for the same group.
Yep.
So it's they
get paid by the same taxpayers.
Right.
Same clients, yeah. And a lot of times the judges are former prosecutors for the state themselves, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, they get ahead by getting more prosecutions. So they could be completely dishonest and putting people in jail for things that aren't really crimes just so that they could advance their career and become a judge someday. And then, of course, you know, a lot of judges also consider running for politics and becoming a politician.
That's right.
They have that excuse that they represent the state, but their pay isn't decided on whether that person goes to jail or not. But it really is, because, I mean, the more prosecutions, the more that's coming into the state.
Exactly. They're not making their money if people aren't going to court.
Right.
So they have all the incentive in the world to find people to throw in jail. Because they're out of a job. If there aren't any crimes to arrest and convict people for, then the judges, the lawyers, all those people are out of jobs.
They're extraneous. Yeah, they're disposable. Yeah, that's true. Conflict of interest, that's the bane of the state.
Yep.
Their conflicting mission and their execution. Oh, well. So, well, that was a good... We covered a lot of stuff. Anything else you had in mind?
I think that's it.
Okay, man. Well, cool show. Thank you, Xavier, for joining us today. It was a pleasure.
Awesome. It was good talking to you again.
Yeah, absolutely. And
all right, man.
Guys, have a good rest of the day.
Thanks a lot. You too.
Yeah.
Do you enjoy First Degree Liberty? If you do, you should share it. Pass it out to your friends. Give it to your family and share it with your neighbors. While you're at it, leave us some feedback by commenting right here on the Podomatic page or email us at firstdegreeliberty@gmail.com. Now sit back and enjoy First Degree Liberty with Chase Rachels and Mike Martelli.